Today on the show, oh, I don't give that away yet, right? We wait till the intro for that?
Why would you, yeah, when have we ever done today on the show?
Today is going to be.
It's an all new with.
Oh, that's, okay. It's an all new with.
Fuck it, let's do the show. It's Smart List. Let's go.
Smart.
Do you guys know what kind of a talent I am with whistling?
I know a talent you don't have.
Now, what's the deal with you and your whistling? This is something that you feel like you're good at.
Yeah, I'm waiting for some sort of oral sex joke from you, Will, blow or something like that. No, probably.
Jason, if you whistle, then you must sing, right? Can you sing?
No, but I make up for my lack of singing with my incredible talent with my lips and my mouth. Will, teeing it up higher for you.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Buddy, Okay. Low-hanging fruit. It's too...
It is. It's too low. It's too low.
Too low even for me.
I'll take it.
Go, Sean.
Say it again. Set me up again.
Forget it. We have too much of a respectable guest waiting in the wings. Would you guys like to get to the guest, or do you have something pithy to say on this Monday morning?
I'm kind of grumpy this morning.
Why?
I don't know why.
Well, guess what's going to cheer you up? Our next guest.
It's going to be exciting.
Okay?
Okay.
Our next guest, our only guest of this week.
Sure.
The next guest in the long line of great guests here on Smart List. Gang, who's hungry?
I'm hungry.
I hope you're starving.
Yeah.
Not only for the subject of food, but for charity and altruism. Because if there's a lineup in heaven, this man is going to skip it.
Oh.
This week's guest gives being human a good name. This man has not only been giving folks some of the best tasting, most inventive food for years, he's also been keeping millions of folks alive by making food available in some of the least fortunate among us. After earthquakes and hurricanes, he and his team are there serving millions of meals for citizens and relief workers. Among the many places around the world his organization, World Central Kitchen, has helped, there was Puerto Rico, Haiti, the Hurricane Harvey in Houston, the fires in California and Australia, the explosion in Beirut.
This is all off the top of your head.
And
it's
they're
incredible.
Currently in India helping with COVID relief. He was named one of Time Magazine's most influential people twice. Will, you've only been named once.
Yeah,
he's been awarded Humanitarian of the Year. It's also something you have not been awarded by the James Beard Foundation. And he has over 30 restaurants throughout the world receiving Michelin stars.
Jeez.
And he's a New York Times bestselling author. So, in other words, his parents are
what
just
the hell is he doing here?
Really underwhelmed.
Yeah.
Folks, please welcome the global treasure, Jose Andres.
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right.
Look, there he is.
Yeah.
It's such a pleasure to meet you.
It is such an honor.
I think you're amazing, and everything that Jason said and everything that I know about you is it's an incredible accomplishment. Wow. It's really cool to meet you. Let's get right to it. What did you have for breakfast this morning?
Yeah.
Well, actually, in this last year, I went down 78 pounds. I
was 78 pounds.
Oh my gosh! I'm so glad you didn't say kilos. I thought that you were going to rock us with the kilos.
Yeah. Well, kilos is less confusing than pounds. Let me tell you. But if you're going to lose weight, do it in pounds, people. You are going to feel so much more successful.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was 290. Now I'm 220, 220 something.
Is that because you gained it and then lost it, or you just lost it?
I was overweight. I mean, listen to me. When you are a chef and all your life, what you do is you love eating, you love creating, you love testing, because I have to test my restaurants, the cocktails. Yeah. I cannot say no to my chefs and my teams that are working so hard.
No, you got to drink, you got to
eat. That would be rude.
Only on the testing, only on the... I eat more than I have to. And this without breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
Now, can
this
we
is
assume
why I've
then
always
that,
thought, but Jason, I just want to say on that subject, I've always had this theory that most sommeliers are just alcoholics and they found a job in which they can dress it up.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But sommeliers do a good work as hard as it is, and they spit. It's easier to spit wine than is to spit octopus with basil, right? I mean, you are there. What do you do? Where do you throw it? in front of whom? I mean, it's, oh my God.
Yeah.
Now, can we assume then that you have stopped tasting the food and the wine at your restaurants and therefore we can't be sure of the quality anymore now that you've been losing weight?
Controversial. No.
Well, listen, he's saving his life.
Hold on. And you are the guy that invited me? Thank God.
I know.
Like, what's going on with you, man? It's like,
who's taking care of quality control?
He's a nice agent undercover.
who is handling your quality control if you're not spending as much time tasting your food around the world?
Well, this is not about I, the person, man. No, this is about we, the people.
Yes. Jason.
I am only as good as the people I have around me. I have a team.
Oh, you take smaller taste.
Jose, I'm so sorry.
Smaller taste.
Jose.
Apologies.
It's very aggressive this morning.
A smaller taste.
Yes.
And I've been doing fasting. I've done 2 21-day fasting.
Wow.
Which actually you feel very good. Actually, you are not hungry. Actually, your body begins eating the fat that you have everywhere. Yeah. And actually, you feel better than ever.
When you say fasting, you mean no food at all?
Just liquids?
Liquids, less than 300 calories a day.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
But this works. I'm telling you, works.
Well, tell me about the first couple of days of that. Are you still decent to live with? Does your wife, is it angry time? I get very angry when I'm not eating.
No, I'm cranky. I'm grumpy anyway.
Yeah, me too.
With or without.
Yeah. Will's grumpy today.
But what happens is, 2 days after, your body just takes over, begins doing what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
Remember that humans, the Homo sapiens thing is something like, it's not a very well given name, okay?
Yeah.
We are more Australopithecus. We are more ancient than that.
I've been saying that
for
years.
So our body, when we eat, makes fat to protect us from when we don't have food. Unfortunately, we have two types of people in the world. The ones that we have more food than we know what to do with it, and the ones that don't have even enough to feed themselves.
Right.
So unfortunately, people like me, which I have more food that I can do with it, my body is not very smart and transform everything I eat into what? Into fat. Mm-hmm. Why the body doesn't make the calories into smoke?
Yeah.
No, has to transform it into fat. No, that's not very smart.
Right.
It's too bad it didn't make it into cash. That would be great if your body just made
all
that
extra stuff. Would be great. Yeah.
And then you become like an ATM. So Jose, let me ask you a question. So speaking of which, of the people who have not enough food to eat and people who have too much food to eat, you know, it seems to me, and this is just, you know, anecdotal at best, I every time I see in the last few years that there's something going on, whether it's the hurricanes in Puerto Rico or wherever it is, I see you there on the ground providing meals for people.
That's amazing. Unbelievable.
And it's such an incredible service that you are providing. And you're setting, not only are you helping to feed people, but you're setting an example for all of us of what we can do. And it seems to me the only thing you're really doing, you're just doing it. And when did that impetus happen for you? What was that moment that you said, this is where I have to get on the ground and start doing it?
Yeah, well, obviously it was many, 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 many stories through my lifetime that began building, right? Like all of us. We are who we are thanks to those people that influence us. My mom, my dad, they were nurses. I saw empathy in those hospitals, the times I went with them to visit nurses, people working in hospitals, they were good people. My father, mother planted that seed in me. I was in the Spanish Navy. I think it's the first time I saw inequality beyond what I ever saw where I grew up in Barcelona. I only read it in books, but when I went to Africa, Latin America, I began seeing big inequality. All those things began happening, right? Then I arrived in Washington, D.C. in 1993. I joined an organization called D.C. Central Kitchen, founded by a man called Robert Egger, who told me philanthropy seems is about the redemption of the giver, when philanthropy should be about the liberation of the receiver. Mm-hmm. Just work with me. I opened my restaurant on 7th and E. 1996, they discover the home and office of Clara Barton, the woman that created the Missing Soldiers Office, who took care of all the wounded soldiers during the Civil War. Like my mom, she was a nurse. Amazing what she did.
Yeah.
Okay, what happened? One day, Katrina, I was in the comfort of my home watching how men and women at the Superdome, which actually everybody had it wrong. Everybody thinks it's a sports venue. No, wrong, people. Arenas, stadiums are gigantic restaurants that entertain with NBA players or football players.
It's true.
How we left those men and women hungry. So that moment of inaction, with everything I learned before, planted the seed on me of saying, we have to do better. There's no way we're going to leave anybody hungry. I was in Cayman Islands with my friend Anthony Bourdain and Eric Rippert when the earthquake hit Haiti. Hundreds of thousands of people died in Port-au-Prince. Few days, few weeks later, I got on a plane and I landed in Dominican Republic. I drove to Haiti. I didn't go there to help. I went there to learn mm-hmm. how chefs like me that feed the few, how can we part of feeding the many? That's very much the beginning of what became World Central Kitchen. In this pandemic alone, more than 60 million meals. Now wow. we respond to fires, hurricanes, earthquakes, you name
so,
it.
So Hurricane Katrina was kind of the thing for you, the thing that you saw and you were like, I've got to do something. Because it was for me, too. I remember sitting on the couch watching that happen. I got off my butt. I flew down there. I helped clean. I helped do everything, anything I could. With actually a friend of ours, Meredith Walker. We flew down there together.
Wow.
But
I remember that.
Yeah. And so that was the first thing you that inspired you to do that.
But in my inaction, in my not right. being there,
right.
on me saying how this happened, and was many chefs and many other people that randomly put a barbecue outside and began cooking. But mm-hmm. responses like these, they need to be much more broader. They need to be very well organized. Long story short, we cannot leave people behind right. after one of the most dramatic events in their lives. And sometimes I feel like the system is not in place to respond fast and quick. World Central right. Kitchen, now we are fast and quick.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I do have a question, though, backing up. You moved in 93 to D.C. is what you said, I think.
Yep.
What was the first meal you had in America, and what was it like?
Okay. So I moved to Washington, D.C. in 93. But first time I came to America was in 1990 when I was in the Spanish Navy in a beautiful ship, a tall ship, the training ship for the Spanish midshipmen. Beautiful Juan Sebastian del Cano. Unbelievable. And first American port we touched was Pensacola in beautiful mm-hmm. Florida, the city of the five flags, as they call it. Mm-hmm. And the first dish I ate was a soft shell crab in this French restaurant that the owner came and invited me and took me there. And his first time ever I had any dish in America was that soft shell crab.
Wow.
But when you were in the Navy, were you already a chef? Were yep. you,
you were cooking for the captain, right?
Actually, I became the chef of the Admiral of Spain. And what happens with me is I was very young when I was in the seaport of Barcelona with my dad, and I saw that tall ship. Mm. And I told my dad, Daddy, what do I have to do to go in that tall ship? And he told me, well, you have to be in the Spanish military, you have to be in the Navy, and if you are chosen, you'll go to that boat. Mm. Great. Life, many years later, I end in the Navy. And they decided, because I already was a promising young cook, that I was going to cook for the admiral. You had to see me when the admiral is like, welcome to our home. We're so happy you're here. And I tell him, well, you may be happy, but I'm not happy. I wanted to go on a boat. I'm tired of cooking. I want to see the world. So they told me, don't tell this to the admiral. Well, first opportunity I got is the first thing I told him. Good news, the admiral told me, listen, let's do a deal. This boat you want to go on doesn't leave port until 6 months from today. Why you don't stay here with me and my family, you know, feed us, cook for us, and the day before that ship goes away, I send you. You know, it happens. He kept his word. I kept mine. Wow. And for me, it was the adventure of my life.
How long were you on that ship?
That was 6 months and was great because it's the first time I left Europe very much.
Yeah.
And I went to places like Ivory Coast and Abidjan and Rio Janeiro and Brazil and Fortaleza and Dominican Republic.
Mar-a-Lago.
Mar-a-Lago, I don't remember visiting Mar-a-Lago back
Not
in time.
Not many do.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah. Yeah. So when you go into these places, flying in there with the wings of an angel, as Will loves it when I say, I imagine it's difficult and complicated to coordinate your efforts along with some of the other federal responses too, like say FEMA or something like that. Is that a smooth thing? Is that a complicated thing? Is it a contentious thing?
I imagine that they appreciate you helping them, but also at times maybe their ego might not want you guys to get in there first or have a bigger impact. How does all that work?
No, I think the men and women of FEMA, of the National Guard, they are great people. They are people that they give
and
their
Red
best.
Red Cross and, yeah.
They are, essentially, they are all good people.
Yeah.
You always have the one or two, but people are good. People have good intentions. The truth is that very big organizations are very slow.
Yeah.
And as bigger as they get, slower they become. And the challenge I was facing was, if you are an organization that claims itself have on their name emergency as one of the words.
Yeah.
Emergency, when it's about food and water, it's very simple to understand. The urgency of now is yesterday.
Uh-huh.
You cannot be planning for what you're going to feed them next month. You have to feed them today. And so
Will does that. He hoards food for like a week because he just planned, right?
I like to eat. It's rare that I'm actually not eating on the podcast right
that
now.
That is very rare.
It is very rare.
So, I mean, look, these are all great things. And obviously you go in and you do this stuff, but it's kind of almost part of Jason's question, really. Not only do you have to deal with all the bureaucracy of these huge agencies that are filled with lots of people who are doing amazing things, but there are regulations and they want you to do it this way or that way and stuff. On top of which, you have to organize, you have to get all this food down there and prepare it, and the logistics of food and keeping it fresh and all that kind of stuff into areas that are in distress.
Yep.
That must be very tough.
Okay, I would love to tell you that it's super complicated and super difficult, but let me give you very quick examples. In this pandemic alone, right, we put 3,000 restaurants working at once, almost 350,000 meals a day, which is not a huge number. World Food Program, the men and women, they do millions of meals a day all around the world. So I'm not saying this for show off. It's the contrary. But our 350,000 meals are very specific. When hospitals all of a sudden don't have anybody that feeds them at the beginning of the pandemic, you tell me where? Harlem, Oakland, San Antonio, Newark, you name it. We've been there. We are there. We create the systems, Javits Center. We create the system to provide meals right outside the Javits Center. Central Park, we did when they opened that field hospital. We were there before even the hospital was open. India right now, 17 cities, 65 hospitals, thousands of meals a day. We began, not today, last week when we read it on the news, we began like 6-7 weeks ago. Bahamas, you remember, 2 years ago,
A
hurricane, one of the biggest hurricanes in the history of the Caribbean, and next to Maria, Dorian, Category 5. 80,000 people lost their homes, very much everybody in the two islands north of the Bahamas, Abaco and Grand Bahama. Mm-hmm. Within 5 days, within 4 days, we were providing almost 80,000 meals a day with 6 helicopters, 2 seaplanes.
But you see that. So that this is my point. So you see this hurricane's coming. Everybody knew it was going to hit the Bahamas. In anticipation of that, do you guys mobilize and say, okay, here's our plan. We know that the Bahamas, we know that there are going to be people who are hungry. Let's go. Let's be ready. Yep. We're in Florida. We've got the helicopter.
That's a great question. Obviously, we've been learning. In the old days, we will be more responsive. Mm-hmm. Even our response, like in Maria, Puerto Rico, we were able to be very quickly in our response. In Bahamas, the team of World Central Kitchen was already in place. We were in Nassau, and we were in Fort Lauderdale. Why? Because you want to be inside, and you want to be in the outside. So it depends how bad is inside. You can be giving support from the outside. So yes, we are there. Yes, we have a plan, but careful, we don't overplan. I always say that we learned in 2020 that organizations, families, individuals like you, we have a tendency to plan too much. When you plan too much, what happens, my friends? That things usually never go as you plan them. And if you don't train your teams to embrace complexity and to be good on adaptation, they fail miserably. So our motto is plan less, adapt more, be more about software, not so much about hardware, meaning many organizations, for whatever is the response, is about equipment you bring from A to C. What's happening with us? I believe that across the planet is 100 millions of people in the food business, millions of farmers, millions of cooks, millions of restaurant owners, millions of food distributors, that when we bring them all together, we can respond to anything. One more example, in the middle of the pandemic, Beirut, the big explosion in Lebanon, World Central Kitchen with people of Lebanon. In 12 hours, we were delivering close to 20,000 meals a day with the help of 10 restaurants.
That's amazing.
Around ground zero. I was able to land myself 3 days later or 4 days later. By the time I landed, the entire system of feeding first responders, firefighters, hospitals, volunteers was already in place.
But Jose, this type of effort, even if a world organization like, let's say, NATO or what, if they were to mount this, it would take an infrastructure that would be, that you would need multiple countries to run. It would take funding that multiple countries would need to chip in to hit the threshold required. So how can you, an incredibly accomplished, you know, philanthropist and chef and restaurant owner, how can you grab all of these assets, all of this money, all of this infrastructure? I imagine it takes a great deal of donations. Can people donate to to the organization? And is that the only way that it stays afloat, or are you subsidized by governments as well?
Now, recently, we've been talking about is some countries that they love to work with us. Indonesia, we've been there in tsunamis, in earthquakes. I was myself in Providencia, in this beautiful island in the Caribbean, owned by Colombia, which was hit by a very big back-to-back hurricanes last year, Iota and Eta. We did a great response there. So it's many governments and even agencies here that they began talking to us. Mm-hmm. But for us, it's very important that to understand that so far we've been really funded by people in America and around the world, $1 at a time, $10 at a time, some people with bigger donations.
And how can people do that real quick?
WorldCentralKitchen.org. There you can learn the work we do. WCK.org.
WCK.org. Gotcha.
WorldCentralKitchen.org. Both work.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
We get support from Happy Egg. I love starting my morning off with farm-fresh eggs full of flavor. At Happy Egg, all of their hens roam on 8 or more acres of land, leaving no mystery to why their eggs are the best. These hens are raised on 8-plus acres. I got to keep it down because if my hens find out, they don't have 8-plus acres. My hens only have like 3/4 of an acre. And they're going to go on strike. Anyway, all of their hens are cared for by small family farmers and live their best hen lives day in and day out. All of this results in eggs with plump orange yolks that are full of flavor. I just, as I mentioned, I like to kick off my morning with farm fresh eggs. The difference is so glaring between an egg from Happy Egg and an egg that just came from clearly some kind of like sad factory. And you just have to taste it for yourself. If you're a fan of eggs, which I am, do yourself this favor and try Happy Egg eggs. You will not be disappointed. You will notice the difference immediately. Get with the Happy Eggs. They're so good. Next time you're at the store, look for the yellow carton. Choose Happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com/smartless to find a store near you. And if you come by the house, don't mention it to my aunts. Thank you to one of our new sponsors, My Mochi Ice Cream, for supporting the show. I just discovered cookies and cream, My Mochi Ice Cream, and I'm a little obsessed, but I'm a lot obsessed. Do you not know what My Mochi Ice Cream is? Picture this. It's a perfect little scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream wrapped in the softest, sweetest dough known to mankind. My Mochi Ice Cream is sweet. It's chewy. It's cool. It's creamy all at the same time. It comes in tons of fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. That cookies and cream, I've always been a cookies and cream fan, but then when I had the My Mochi, oh my gosh. I mean, I was like, my mouthy loved it. First of all, an absolute knockout. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are gluten-free and about 90 calories each. You can find My Mochi at Target or go to mymochi.com to find your nearest grocery store. Discover the cool, creamy, joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today. We get support from Canva. When your work, presentations, and docs look good, you look good. And you can design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva. Canva is an easy-to-use online design platform. It helps people design compelling visual content and is great for designing any type of presentation and great for any teammate. So our team at Smartless is using Canva when they're coming up with different design concepts for various things with related to Smartless and Smartless Media, because we have a lot of stuff going on. It's a busy crew, okay? And if it wasn't for Canva, they'd all be fired. Supercharge your work with AI-powered Canva presentations, docs, videos, and more. In just a few seconds, you can generate slides and text from a prompt. AI is built into Canva right where you work, so you can stay on task without any app switching. It's AI that's easy to learn and even easier to use. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva is perfect for any work task. Sales decks, hiring docs, marketing brainstorms, employee videos, you name it. Anyone at work can design with Canva. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work.
And now back to the show.
How are you able to do this and keep your restaurant empire, I say, up and going?
I mean, I was thinking the same thing.
I mean, do you sleep at all?
I mean, I do. Listen, I told you, it's not me who makes it happen, right? It's not Jose.
But there's some oversight that you are lending at a minimum.
Wait, you said I do when he said you sleep. You said I do, but I get the sense you don't get a lot of sleep. Is that true?
Well, yeah. You know, I can take 30-minute nap here, 20-minute nap there.
What about a funny gummy?
Yeah, a little bit of a gummy will get you, but then I'll get you hungry, and then you'll blow your fast.
Man, I'm
never mind.
A gummy? What is that?
Oh, Jason, no. Do you have something you want to tell the group?
No.
Gummy bear?
No.
What?
Yeah, they're medical marijuana gummies.
Ah, a gummy. That's a gummy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say one thing. Like, if you go to buy, like I did, chocolate that has gummy marijuana, read the instructions of the tablet of chocolate. Don't eat the tablet of chocolate like you want to eat the entire tablet of chocolate like I did. And if it says only eat one square, don't eat the other 24 squares. Because if it's telling you eat one square every 8 hours and you eat 24 squares in the same hour, that chocolate is really having a gummy effect on
did,
you.
Sure. Yeah. Did things get weird for you, Jose?
Well, my English improved 10 times. That's the good thing. My accent, I mean, all of a sudden is like Ron Howard was like, finally, I'm going to give you a movie actor opportunity, because now I can understand what the fuck you say, Jose. So gummies are good for accents. It's like your tongue gets loose.
Yeah,
for some reason, my tongue and English doesn't get comfortable.
You sound beautiful to me.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Keeping it on the subject of food and hunger is something that baffles you, I'm sure, baffles me a bit too. Is there anything that we can do that would be a better management of food waste, like in restaurants, how we might be able to help the unhoused or anyone else in society that might be suffering from hunger? How can we take some of the food that's being wasted and use it better?
Listen, people don't want our pity. People want our respect.
Yeah.
It's plenty of food that we produce in America. It's plenty of food that we produce on planet Earth. Actually, big problems, they have very simple solutions. At heart, what's going on is that many of the issues we face, We have a whole bunch of people overcomplicating things to, I think, keep claiming we need them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if somebody is not able to accomplish something, success into a problem, those people, they should use be removed forever. If we have the same people running certain issues, let's say United Nations, how many years we've been saying we're going to be ending childhood hunger? Mm. Since I remember 40, 50 years. Mm-hmm. My friends, childhood hunger is something we can all commit to end, bring in all the countries, all the rich countries. But where there is a will, there is a way. I don't sense it's really a will more than giving a big speech where everybody claps, and after the claps end, everybody goes their home and everybody forgets. Right. We need to start making everybody, results, especially the big leaders and the big organizations, more responsible for their claims and their promises. And if they don't deliver,
they're out.
Major things have to happen.
Yeah, I agree.
Jose, have you ever done hosted a cooking show or something? You'd be amazing.
Yeah. I never passed the accent. I don't listen
that's
to me.
That's not true. That's
no,
not
let
true.
Me tell you. In Spain, during 3 years, I had a prime time show at 7 p.m. In the mayor.
I heard that.
In the mayor channel. Meaning I had like 24% share of ratings in Spain alone.
Wow.
In America, I had one on PBS that was great because I wanted to show Spain. And, you know, when they don't, I got on PBS, which is a great channel. I love it. That's some great TV.
Great tote bags.
Yeah.
What I really want to know is, and Sean asked you what you had for breakfast this morning. Yeah. If what's your guilty pleasure food that you're like, this is not high haute cuisine, this is whatever, but I love it, like Doritos or whatever.
Fast food.
What is there something that you like that you're ashamed of, food wise? Just food wise.
Don't start crying though, Jose. Do not start crying.
No. I mean,
no.
I like everything. I mean, I like ketchup on white rice.
Ketchup on white rice.
On white rice?
Yeah, Heinz.
What are you, English?
It's fine. Ketchup, as we used to call it.
Ketchup.
Ketchup on white rice. I've never heard of that. I'm going
to
try that.
And with a fried egg, it's to die for. Ooh. And if you add a sausage, this is the closest thing we have. Arroz a la cubana.
But now you're becoming a chef. Now you're becoming a cook.
No. Okay. But you know, I like caviar. Me?
Right.
My guilty pleasure is caviar. Yeah. Those little black balls.
And do you like it with the eggs, with the onions, with the, how do you dress
nothing.
Up?
No, nothing. Straight up. A finger.
With a finger.
Oh, yeah.
So no little pancake?
No, little pancakes.
He's in the Caspian Sea. He's reaching under the water.
Let me tell you, my friend, when they give you things like blinis and little pancakes and onions, it's because they don't have enough caviar to feed everybody.
That's it.
Period. No.
Let me ask you about ketchup, because I love ketchup. I grew up putting ketchup in a lot of stuff because my mom burnt a lot of the food.
Aww.
But she was great, too. But isn't it true that a lot of American ketchup it doesn't have tomatoes in it?
Huh.
Well, hold on a second. Number one.
Here we go. Once again, we're mired in controversy over here on Smart.
Yeah, you're trying to get me in trouble with Hank. Listen to me. I believe in longer tables, no higher walls, my friend.
I didn't say product name.
I know, but ketchup. Let me tell you. Number one, when you mention ketchup, you need to remember that the first early ketchups in America themselves, they were not even based out of tomatoes.
No kidding.
They were made out of mushrooms. They were made out of oysters. They were made out of blackberries. Those were the early ketchups.
What are you talking about? This is insane.
Tomato took over for different reasons.
Why?
Tomato took over in a huge way, which I think is a loss to America because it's good to have diversity.
It's the tomato cartel.
It's good to have diversity.
It's
very
cartel.
We need diversity, people. Diversity. Yeah. More types of ketchup in your life will make
different
you better.
Different color ketchup. You know, they've made it. It's called mustard.
Yeah. No, that's not ketchup. That's mustard.
It's something else.
But it's a different color. He's talking about diversifying the color of ketchup.
But ketchup
I think
came really an influence from Asia mixed with other things, but ketchup should be more diverse. Cannot only be tomato and cannot only be one brand. Needs to be more diverse.
What about mayonnaise? Where do you fall on mayonnaise? Because, I mean, Boy, I love mayonnaise.
I fall right on top of it.
I know you do.
I like mayo, too. I am a mayo boy. I mean, yeah. I'm a mayo boy.
With fries?
I think it's disgusting.
No, no. What are you talking about? This is disgusting. It's olive oil, man. I'm from Spain. We're the kings of olive oil. Why are you saying it's disgusting?
Wait. What is mayonnaise?
Hold on a second. Grab mayonnaise between your fingers. Mentally think it. Grab mayonnaise with your fingers.
Start rotating your fingers.
What are we grabbing?
With the beautiful mayo. It's a sensation, man.
It's like
bring it to your lips and put it through your tongue. And all of a sudden you have that amazing, shiny, silky texture inside your mouth. And the mayo is telling you, baby, what you've been all my life.
Mayo
will change your life if you give mayo an opportunity, man. Let mayo be part of your life.
Let your mouth be dripping with mayo. Hey, Jose, you know, the reason that Jason often, he doesn't like mayo because he's often in reviews of his acting, they describe him as mayonnaise. I know.
Yeah, it's true.
But mayonnaise with fries, come on, mayo with fries is...
Canada, quiet. We're not putting any mayonnaise on French fries.
Who cooks for you, Jose?
Well, a lot of people cook for me. My wife cooks for me. I cook for her. I cook a lot at home. You asked me what I had today for breakfast.
Yeah.
I had just a coffee. By the way, what we call American coffee, but the American coffee I make is simply the best American brew coffee in the history of mankind.
What's the name?
Wow.
No, it doesn't matter because I use different coffees from different parts. Yeah. But it's the way I make it. It's 25 grams of coffee, 375 grams of the water.
Come on,
I pour the water slowly in a dripping, slowly. You can hear the noise of the water hitting the coffee grounds. And the coffee is like happy. The aroma is coming out. And then when it's filtered, I grab the little pitcher with the coffee. I get this amazing glass, and I come up like 10, 20, 30 centimeters up in the air. The stream of black coffee drops into the cup, and all that foam begins coming up. Foam, air. And then when you bring that coffee to your lips with those bubbles shiny that you can see through like there are thousands of eyes looking at you, that coffee will change your mind in ways that in the morning you will feel like re-empowered.
I agree. Sean has that same experience when he's in the takeout line at Sonic, when he's there at the... I do. You know what I do? I do French press every morning, Avi. And so I don't do it on the pot like you do on the stove, which is old school, but I just do... I pour the hot water on the grounds, just enough to cover the grounds, to let the bubbles burst, so it lets a little bit of the sort of the bitterness out.
The flowering. Yeah, it's called the flowering.
And then I pour the rest of the water in, let it sit, then I stir it a little bit and never boiling water because I don't want to burn those grounds. And then I slowly, after it's steeped for a while, I push down. And it's a whole process.
We're on NPR or something.
Well, welcome, guys. Welcome to culture, you guys. I mean,
but what do you think about when I have my coffee? I like it. I like it's already made when I wake up. I pour it in the cup and I drink it. Same thing with food. That's the reason I don't cook is that I don't understand the concept of taking a half an hour to cook something that's going to give me not, 5 Jason, minutes
that,
to eat.
Jose, did you hear that half an hour?
Jason, it's not half an hour. It takes you organization, man. 3 minutes. Listen, Jason was this French guy, and I don't mention French guys in public conversations often.
Yeah, better not.
I'm from Spain.
This is great.
So he said, tell me what you eat, and I will tell you who you are. Jason. How you eat and what you eat is a part of you, my man.
It's so sad.
Now this is all I eat, and I want you to
Jason,
give me.
Jason, be
I
honest.
You,
be fucking honest with Jose right
I'm
now.
I'm gonna be. I would never lie
I
to
want
Jose.
Him, okay.
Let me tell you what I eat every single day, and I want you to give me one thing in each dish that I can add to it to just spice up my life a little bit. Number one, for breakfast every morning, I have oatmeal with almonds and raisins, and I put a little bit of amigoyam cinnamon on top. And then for lunch and dinner, I have a 40-pound salad with chicken chopped up in it. Full stop. That's just, I'm in a rut,
psycho.
And I can't get out of it.
Like a psychopath.
But these things are quick to make, and I'm done, and I'm moving on with the rest of my life. I'm putting some food in the tank.
You eat because it's a necessity, not because it's out of enjoyment. Yeah,
in the bare amount.
Correct.
Jason, I'm so sad to hear that this is leaving. I mean, number one, why you chop the chicken? What the chicken has done to you? Don't chop the chicken. I mean, chicken has done nothing to us people. Chicken are good people, all right? They may have feathers, but that's fine. And let the chicken be the chicken. Okay, but I'm not going to get there. Number one, on the appetizer and the thing you have, this weird thing with that own meal. And I mean, my wife has something like that too, and we are discussing our... marital arrangements.
Sure.
But I will add dragon fruit.
Dragon fruit in my oatmeal.
Yeah, in your own meal.
Dragon
fruit is going to bring freshness.
Yeah.
It's going to bring the nice crunchy seeds.
Yeah.
It's going to be a slightly sweetness, natural.
Texture is a big part of it.
Oh, God,
right?
It's so good. And on the salad, I will say put Spanish olive oil. Spanish sherry vinegar.
Okay.
And I will add some sesame seeds. And don't chop the chicken, man. Use a fork and a knife, like every human being. Why you
chicken.
Chop it like
Pull.
Chop?
Nobody uses he uses the fork like it's just in service of shoveling it into his mouth. Now let me ask
Jason,
you something.
Jason, do you ever speak to your ingredients? I mean, you speak to the chicken before you eat it.
Well,
do you establish a relationship?
Sometimes
before?
It's the only person who'll listen.
Yeah, exactly. Because the family's usually eaten already. I chew a lot. I'm a very slow eater. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's got to be a good thing, right? Because I chew a lot.
Yeah.
So usually there's no one else around the table. So I will
talk
to the
salad. The cows chew a lot too. The cows are chewing all day. I mean, as you know, you feel like a cow.
Then they throw it up and they re-eat it. Is that right?
Wait. Sean, tell Jose what you eat. Tell him, because Jason obviously eats that. It's a very sort of California, and we become a very bland society here. He has the thing, and then he just has the salad with the chicken. That's all he can have, and blah, blah, blah. And it's very controlled, and it's so lame. So we're done with Jason. Sean, tell him what you eat.
Uh-oh. I eat a lot of tuna fish sandwiches. I eat a lot of hamburgers. I eat a lot of pizza.
But you're in California, no?
Yeah.
Did you had Monterey prawns? They're in season right now.
No, what's that?
Monterey prawns.
Do they have that at Hardee's? Because if they have it at Hardee's, he's at it.
No, you have to go and find them. Do you eat sea urchin? You should put sea urchin in your tuna melt.
Oh, God, sea urchin. I don't want anything with tentacles or suction cups. I don't do that.
Sea urchin don't have tentacles. Okay. What are you talking? It had the spines. It's like a porcupine.
I don't want the spines. No, I don't want the spines.
Sea urchin.
I'm cooking. You know what I'm cooking right now? I'm cooking an octopus. And his nails.
Suction cups. I don't want
Right now. It's cooking right now at your house?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm making a paella with rabbit and snails.
Ooh.
And I'm serving an appetizer of octopus, Galician style. Very good. Very good.
What do you think about the French? Really love to cook la pain. What do you think about the French?
The pain is bread.
I mean, French are good people. They live north of Spain.
Yeah, I'm goading you.
they live north of Spain.
Uh-huh. Are you happy that the Pyrenees are there to separate you?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. We learn a lot from us, but where do they go for the good ingredients? They come to Spain. Where do they go? Where do they go for the beach? They come to Spain. Where do they go for wine that actually... Uh-huh. I mean, let's face it, people. When you go to a French restaurant...
Let it out.
The maître d' didn't even tell you bienvenue. And already $20.
Yeah, right.
Only because he talks to you in French. It's $20.
Right.
I know. I have a lot of French friends. I mean, they sit you down and the sommelier tells you something in French. $10 before you chose the wine. I mean, come on, people. I mean,
Jose,
really, I like French people, but oof.
Jose, have you ever gone on a hunting trip and killed an animal and then cooked that animal? Because like you just said, you got a paella going with rabbits. So I started thinking, like, where does he get these rabbits from? Have you ever gone out and, like, on purpose hunted for a meal that you and some other chefs might get together and cook?
Yeah, I know this is going to get me in trouble.
No,
with Peter,
we can always
we'll cut it out.
Hunting in the right way is good.
We'll cut it.
Keeps everything. So I've done. No, don't cut it. Just leave it.
Okay.
But quail and partridge and pheasant and then cook it. Oh, yeah, many times. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes sense. I mean, every animal we've ever eaten has been killed for us to eat. And so why not have the chef himself kill that animal and then cook that animal as opposed to it being killed on some farm, right?
Well, there you go. I mean, that's
it makes sense.
Correct. And you only eat what you hunt, which
exactly.
I think is the...
Yeah.
Let me tell you, my friend, I like meat. I have a meat concept called Bazaar Meat, but more and more we're going to see that we're going to eat less quantity of that meat.
Yeah,
of higher quality of the meat we eat.
I like that.
And I think vegetables are going to win the day. I think nothing is sexier than a pineapple, my friend. I mean, think about it for a second. You put a steak in your mouth, okay? First 10 seconds, the flavors, my man here, a strong person. 10 seconds later, what you have is a piece of shit in your mouth, tasteless, that you have to keep munching for the next 30 seconds of your life. You cannot establish a conversation. Nobody understands my English because that piece of crap is in my tongue. Shit, you put a pineapple in your mouth. The pineapple is sexy, is fresh, is juicy. You keep, everything is good. So go with pineapple. It's better than a steak.
You know, I saw this interesting documentary once where it said, you know, that people think that you got to eat a bunch of protein to stay big and strong. And then they bring up this good point that, you know, gorillas, elephants, giraffe, they're all vegetarians. They don't eat meat, and they've got all that size. So you can live a big, robust life just eating vegetables and fruit your whole life. Is that correct? No.
I would say, I mean, blue whales, I mean, I would say you're correct. But again, we need to be smarter the way we eat. There's so many good things out there. It's so many good, asparagus when they're in season, strawberries when they're in season, the green peas when they're in season,
I love
morels, the chanterelles.
Smashed
oh my
peas
God,
on toast.
The bounty of, and do you know the most American fruit that no American knows?
Sean Hayes.
The most American fruit that no American knows. Pawpaws.
Pawpaws.
They are very big here in the East, from Virginia all the way to Ohio.
Yeah.
Lewis and Clark, actually, they ate pawpaws in their way back.
Yeah.
And pawpaw is this amazing, it tastes like in between a mango and a chirimoya. I don't know if you know what the chirimoya is, but if you don't, just Google it. And it's fascinating. So the most amazing fruit in America is unaware of it.
Huh.
Have you ever had, let me ask you this, Jose, have you ever had what we in Canada we call a Saskatoon, which is like a wild blueberry? It's got a little red flavor, a little red color to it.
It's gross
in the wild. Incredible. So when I was growing up.
Yeah, I think I ate them once.
Brilliant. We used to have Saskatoon pie my grandmother would make, and you'd go out and you'd pick the Saskatoons and make it incredible. Incredible.
Jason, what are you drinking? It looks
this
yellow.
This is it's water and orange flavored electrolytes. Don't ask.
Electrolytes?
It's chemicals.
Hold on. You have electrolytes to do a podcast?
I do a lot of sweating. I do a lot of sweating during this podcast.
Hold on. Oh, Jose, I love this. Keep going.
Electrolytes?
I'm prepping. I'm prepping for my exercise afterwards, to be frank.
Jose really came alive. He really lit up when you told him that you were taking electrolytes for the
Hey, Smartless listener, we get support from Viator. You know, Scotty and I took a vacation many years ago. We geeked out because we liked the movie Amadeus, and we went to Austria. And it was fantastic. We went to all Mozart's kind of hangout places. And I know, total nerdville. But it was pretty cool. And I absolutely loved it. It will always be one of our favorite memories of vacationing. So maybe one of the most perfect experiences we've ever had traveling. And so next time you're looking to plan the perfect trip like that, an experience, check out Viator. Viator is a tool you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world. Their app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you are traveling or what you are interested in. Feel better about your travel decisions by checking out real traveler reviews to get the inside scoop from others who have already checked out the experiences. Viator offers 24/7 customer service so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. Plus, free cancellation to help you plan for the unexpected. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challenger, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who has taken her husband Art and transformed him into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt him out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a challenger event close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. Her strategy takes a turn when he finds himself standing across the net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Past and present collide and tensions run high. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at ChallengersMovie.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartlist. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and bar mates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplish something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
And a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders,
balloonists,
bobsledders,
and big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fella the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Jose, you get asked this all the time, but is there a meal that sticks out in your head that is your absolute favorite that you've had? It's because of the people you were with or the food, or is there just one meal in your whole life you're like, you'll never forget it?
Oh my God, I had so many of those.
Of course.
I had plenty of those, but... is this guy, Ferran Adrià. His restaurant is closed now. You'll never be able to eat there again. Uh-oh. He's probably the best chef in the history of mankind, period. Most creative.
What's his name again?
Ferran, F-E-R-R-A-N, Adrià, A-D-R-I-A, Adrià. He's my mentor, he's my master, he's my best friend. This guy has a mind that goes through this prism of ideas and light and sensations and feelings and smells. Yeah. And he understands, he's like a food whisperer, man. He understands food like nobody. And a meal in his restaurant that usually will be anywhere between 30 and 45 dishes without electrolytes. I mean, electrolytes, they charge you extra. This will be...
What about, did they have a chopped salad with chicken?
But then one I remember 3 Christmas ago, the 24th of December, I am in Cádiz, in the south of Spain, where my wife is. Mm. We began cooking at 10 a.m. in the morning. Mm. We were cooking until 2 a.m. on the 25th. I made this very big fire with 20, 30 terracotta bowls. We were grilling octopus and boiling a shrimp that just came from the oceans and doing baby eels and gooseneck barnacles and cigalas and baby... Oh, my God, that meal... because it was family, because we were in the middle of nowhere, yeah. Because we were cooking all day. Probably was one of those happy moments in my life that I want to recreate again.
Sean, what's your greatest meal of all time that you remember?
Probably a spaghetti from a place called Maggiano's.
Is that really? True?
Yeah, any time of week.
Huh.
Where is that? Yeah.
It's at the Grove.
It's at the Grove. Oh my God.
It's at a shopping
mall.
Is there
any part of yourself that says, just why bother?
Yeah, why don't you just take yourself out around back?
Yeah. I have a question for Sean. So Sean, how do you
please follow up, Jose?
How do you eat your spaghetti? You put the entire fork in, or you get one spaghetti from the beginning of the spaghetti?
Well,
tell me how you eat your spaghettis, and I will tell you what type of podcaster you are.
Okay,
you
know? So Will can probably answer that for me.
He cuts it.
No, he eats his spaghetti. It's very hot. First of all, it's very hot because it's just out of the microwave. So he has to peel the lid off the container because it comes in a container. And then he just pours it and it's like a drink. He eats it like a drink, like a beverage.
I shove it in my mouth.
Jason, Jose, what's your best meal? Wait. We're going around the horn. Jason, go ahead. Your favorite meal. Sean, that was it. That was your favorite meal. The spaghetti.
Spaghetti's my favorite meal of all time. Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember a single meal, Jason, that was your best ever?
Yeah, no, but the Dodger dog and peanuts never fails at Dodger Stadium. Okay. How about that? Is that fair?
Hold on. Peanuts as your favorite meal at
a Dodger dog, a hot dog.
This is so sad. You need me in your life.
Jose, you need peanuts me are full of electrolytes. They're filled with electrolytes.
But my electrolytes, they know where they're coming from. Okay, sorry.
I got to go, it was memorable because I thought, like, I'll never obviously get to do this again. And I got to eat at Chiro's restaurant in Tokyo.
Oh, yeah.
In the subway stop there. Do you guys ever see that?
I'm sure. Yeah, Dreams of Sushi.
Dreams of Sushi.
Oh, wow, really?
And I watched him make my meal and talked with him and whatever, and as much as we could understand each other, and then ate this food that he made for me right there.
Did it hold up?
It was fantastic. And I was with a bunch of other Americans who were like, ew, this is kind of gross. Like, certain dishes, they're like, this is gross. They didn't want to eat it. And I was like, I'm going to eat every morsel of this because this is an experience. It's more than just the food that we're having. This is a life experience.
Mine was in Vienna, Austria. It was the best meal I've ever had in my entire life at some restaurant in some, I don't know, building at the top floor. It was incredible.
Mm. Great story.
Really memorable.
You remember what you ate? It was meatballs and spaghetti, and the place was called Mayanos, too.
It was a very meat heavy.
Jose, where do you land on microwaving? My wife gives me a lot of grief about I have to blast everything that I eat because I like to get it nice and hot so all the flavor explodes, you know, when I do happen to eat something other than a salad.
That sentence.
But she says that the microwave kills all the nutrients. And should I not be doing that? Do I have to put everything in a pan and heat it up slowly over a fire?
Listen, if you have time, obviously cook in the fire in your kitchen, and it's great. But microwave is nothing wrong for me. It's not different than anything else, electric cooking or induction. It's okay, people. Actually, I have a recipe with eggs. You're going to love this one, Jason. You get one egg and one very big spoon of mayo, and you whisk them together.
Oh, yeah. That's delicious.
Okay, and you put it in this kind of Pyrex glass bowl, and you put it in the microwave, 1 minute, 1 minute and a half. What's happening there that when you put the mayo with the eggs, it's like a love affair, right? Because the mayo is like, shit, what's happening here? Oh, shit, the eggs. And the eggs is like, what's happening here? Shit, the mayo. It's the same shit, but they're in love with each other. It's like they're looking themselves at the mirror. And and all the air that the mayo brings into the mix of mayo and egg makes you the best, fluffiest, kind of, I will not call it omelette, but kind of egg thing that you can make in a minute. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable is bigger than unbelievable for you to understand.
Sure. There's a commercial made years ago by Errol Morris. They made them for Miller High Life. And it was just a picture of an empty mayonnaise jar. And the voice of this great voiceover guy called Doug Jeffers, who was just an iconic guy. And he goes, we had to bail him out of two big ones, but we got to hand it to him on the mayo. Nice going, Pierre. That was it. Brilliant. We had to bail them out of two big ones is how the commercial starts.
Did the French invent mayonnaise, Jose?
Yeah.
No. It was the people of Spain.
Is that a Spanish word, mayonnaise?
Totally. I have the proof. I was there.
You were there when they made mayonnaise?
No, you weren't.
Yeah. I mean, I had more than one life. This is my fourth or fifth time I've been on planet
Earth. That chocolate's kicking in.
Here comes the chocolate again.
I've been in other systems. I mean, the solar system is the last one I decide to join.
Sure.
And because it's fun, and my body can only be 60, 70, 80 years, so I keep coming back, so it's fine. So this, my own, you have to go back to the Balearic Islands and Menorca and my own, and the story is documented. And it's obviously Spanish, like everything else, very much. And more important, alioli. For the people that think alioli is mayo with garlic, they're wrong.
What is it?
In Catalonia, in Barcelona, alioli is made only with garlic that you smash in a mortar with the help of the pestle.
Right.
And then you start putting drop by drop of the oil. and you keep doing this kind of circular motion. And slowly the garlic and the oil began creating an emulsion, which the emulsion is nothing more than the molecules of both ingredients began attaching to each other, began embracing each other, began like saying, I love you and I will never separate away from you. And you make a very big bowl where only has one garlic clove, where the rest is only oil, and it's still what you have in your hand is solid. This is mind-blowing. It's one of the most amazing traditional techniques that nobody is aware of. And therefore, alioli and mayo, with all due respect to everybody else, they are from the country I was born.
And speaking of traditional cooking, where do you land on this wave of molecular cooking where things are, they look different and they're smaller and they get freeze-dried or what?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we talked about it before. I mentioned you, Ferran Adrià.
Yeah.
He's the father of molecular cooking, but we don't like that name.
Yeah.
That name is very natty, very stupid, actually.
Yes,
Let me tell you why. Everything is molecular, people. Everything is molecular. Bread, yeast is molecular. Beer is molecular. Winemaking is molecular. Molecules and science, they've been there forever.
Sure.
Now, what happens is this. Before, we had no clue what was happening in cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have all the answers of what's happening in the cooking. In the process, we cook better.
Yeah.
At the end, it's only two types of cooking. Only two types, Jason. The bad cooking and the good cooking.
Right.
You know, come on. It's people like eat chopped chicken on top of green salad and spinach.
Oh, please.
I mean, it's okay. I'm not going to use this against you.
I need better options. I need to move in with you for a few weeks, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think I can fix you in a few weeks. I need you like few seasons. I need you like few seasons. Yeah, like Orsak. It's like I need you few seasons with me.
My dream is for you to come over and make me spaghetti sometime.
Oh, my God. Wow. If I make you... I have a book called Vegetables Unleashed. And the tomato recipe I have, the tomato sauce recipe I have for the pasta, with permission of Marcella Hassan, is the best tomato recipe in the history of mankind for pasta.
Oh,
wow.
It's just astonishing. It's so simple. It's so good.
Now you're beefing with the people of Italy. I mean, you attacked Italy. Now you attacked France. I mean, this is...
No, but hold on
positions.
A second. Hold on a second. I have proof. Listen, the first time ever, with permission of the Mexicans, the first time ever that something like looked like tomato sauce as we understand it today, it showed up in an Italian book. And you know what was the name of that sauce where 90% of the ingredients were tomato? You know,
ketchup.
The name of the sauce was a Spanish sauce.
Oh.
It's real. I have it. I have it on the books. Yeah. It's history. I know it. I can prove it. I rest my case.
I've never been to Spain, and I am not proud of that at all. I'm dying to go to Spain. If I were to go to Spain, do I go to
Barcelona?
If I want to eat the best food, do I go to Barcelona or do I go to Madrid? Or some other place in Spain?
You have to go both. Obviously, I grew up in Barcelona. I'm a Barcelona boy. And Barcelona has amazing places. But Madrid is... And you mentioned jamón. Will mentions jamón. That's jamón ibérico, which is this black pig that eats acorns in the last 4 months of their life. I remember bringing jamón ibérico to America first time 12 years ago. And what I'm very proud is that there was a series on NBC called Hannibal, which was very much the prequel of The Silence of the Lambs.
Sure. Yeah.
And I became from Brian Fuller, the executive director, I became the culinary producer. And I was able to be helping the scriptwriters about stories.
Oh, that's cool.
And I'm very happy that in one of the episodes, I was able to get them to put an Iberico ham during 2 minutes as Hannibal himself was explaining how that ham was being made. And this is the moment that I said, yes.
You made it.
Yes.
You know what? That was another good meal that I had that I very memorable. And I say jamón because it's so big. When I was in Madrid, my friend who lives there full-time, Andrew Newton, what's up, Newts? He was there, and we went to an Atletico game on a Sunday night.
Ooh.
And then went for dinner. you know, you go for dinner Sunday night, you go for dinner at like 11:30 or whatever it is after the game, and that's everybody's just coming.
A proper boy.
And everybody's just coming with the families and little kids, and everybody's sitting down to eat. And I had to leave at like 1:30 because I had an early flight, and the restaurant is still packed, and little kids and families, 12, 15 people. Incredible.
That's the Spanish
meal.
Way, my man.
Yeah,
you are
so
all
good.
Welcome. You are all welcome to come and spend with me. But Sean and Will, I'm very worried because every time I look and Jason is silent, he's having more electrolytes into his body. I am very worried that whatever he's doing after this podcast is going to be electrolyte heavy. And I don't know if this is legal. I don't know if that's legal anymore.
He's just malnourished. He eats like an entertainment executive. Like all the executives and agents in Hollywood, they all want to be thinner and in better shape than all the talent. And they all want, and I'm like, why are you in shape? Nobody cares what you look like.
Listen to your podcast, so careful what you say about them.
That's okay.
Okay, if you don't want Will for any series, guys, I'm here.
I'm moving to Madrid with you, Jose. We're going to eat well, and we're going to have the last laugh.
Let's do one thing. I invite you next year, next summer. Tell me when you're free, and I take the three of you to an eating spree.
Give me five days,
and your life will change forever.
I would love that.
In Spain?
In Spain? Yeah.
I am Jose Andres, and I do endorse this message.
Okay. I've never been, so I want to go.
Well, guess what? On our European tour, we're gonna hit Barcelona.
Our Smartless European tour, which we're gonna do after our North American tour. We're gonna come to Madrid or Barcelona. You pick. We'll go to whatever city you're in, what works for you, Jose, and we're gonna have you on stage for Smartless, and then we're gonna do the culinary thing. We're gonna do all of it, we're gonna shoot all of it, and we're gonna keep all the money. But here's the thing.
Let's do it. We should have gummies before and then we do it.
Don't you worry about it. Jose, you've been very, very nice with your time today, sir. Thank you so much.
Jose. It's such a pleasure meeting you.
What a delight. What an incredible person you are. It's amazing. Such a thrill to meet you.
I'm amazed that people like you can have a podcast, guys. And I feel love being part of it. What I know about America is it's an amazing country. And if three people like you can have a successful podcast like this, anything is possible in America.
Anybody can.
And thank you for giving me that opportunity to belong. Immigrants like me, thank you.
Thank you.
Same as a Canadian, same. Okay, thank you, Jose.
Thank you, sir. Please enjoy. Go tend to your stew, the octopus stew.
I would love to show you. The octopus is amazing. I'll tell you.
So
bye,
jealous.
Guys.
See you, pal.
All right, thank you. Have a great day. Bye, buddy.
Hey, see ya.
Wow. So now when I said at the beginning that he's going to be cutting some lines up in heaven whenever he goes, it's true, right? I mean,
you don't mean chopping up lines in the bathroom.
No. Cutting lines. Like they're not going to make him wait going through the gates up there.
You know what's interesting though? Those really famous chefs that are so talented, they're also gregarious. They're also outgoing, aren't they? There's no introverted chef. I don't think you can be.
No.
But they are famously nasty at times, right? They can be pushed.
They can be.
He doesn't seem nasty.
But I love that it took him a while and he warmed up and he really got the flavor of what we're doing here, which is nothing and just and screwing around.
Right.
And then he just started screwing around and he ends it with just basically clowning us. Yeah. Saying that if you guys can have a podcast, anybody can, and I love that.
He sniffed it out.
I love anybody like that. Uh-huh. I've got all the time in the world for that. Jason, what a great idea. I've often, and we brought it up before to him, it seems like in the last few years.
Just about the restaurant?
No, just that he shows up all the time, every time that there's something going on that's really major in the world where people are hungry, and he's there. And it's incredible. It's such a great example of... it's not dissimilar. I mean, we all do it in our own way. Sean, I know that you went down to the thing, and Jason, I've seen you give out selfies at the Grove before, but
whatever it takes.
But you know what? Every single thing that Jose, every piece of food that Jose was talking about made me want to take a bite.
How long have you been sitting on that? How long?
I wrote it down halfway through.
Oh, you did. Pathetic.
Oh, God, that's so...
Well, now, what did he say about planning? What happens when you overly plan? Nothing
happens
work. Well.
And like, because we haven't said goodbye, so my thing didn't work.
Right.
And we didn't even end it.
We haven't ended. That's what I mean. No. It didn't even work.
Oh, my God. Dude, that bite. Used it the same word, but a different bite.
That works. That's a win.
Smart. Yes. If you like SmartLess, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Get to the chopper. I'll be back. Listen, I gotta tell ya, of all guests we've had on SmartLess, I don't know if we've had a bigger icon on our podcast than Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, what a treat it was talking to that guy. Arnold is an inspiration, from having reached the heights of bodybuilding to then conquer Hollywood and become a global movie star. Oh, and for his third act, he oversaw the world's fifth largest economy as governor of California. The man has truly done it all. In our interview, he shares the secret of how he's able to accomplish what he puts his mind to, what motivates him to keep working out all these years, and the extreme generosity that he received after arriving in America. You gotta listen to this episode to hear what it's like to be Chris Pratt's father-in-law and how Arnold's first comedy, Twins, has made him more money than any other film he's done. Hint, he's also a great businessman. Give it a listen if you haven't. Bye. Seps.